I won't ask.
Morning. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:08 a.m. on Wednesday, February 25th, 2026. And looks like we have just about everybody. Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Co-Chair Shragi, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. We've got one bill on the agenda this morning, and that's House Bill 91. It's the marijuana tax bill by Representative Carrick. We do have a hard stop at 10 a.m. We heard House Bill 91 last session, I believe April 30th or so. But we will get a recap from Representative Carrick and her staff, and then we'll review some updated fiscal notes that were received, and then we'll set the bill aside. So if I could have Representative Carrick, as well as her staff, Mr. Stuart Reilly, please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and give us a recap of the bill.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster and members of the House Finance Committee. Good morning. For the record, Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35, West Fairbanks, and with me today is my staff, Stuart Reilly. Just to do an reintroduction to this legislation, and with the chair's indulgence, I'd also like to mention a couple of items in the sectional that I think merit particular consideration as we bring this bill back forward. So the short history is that in 2014, Alaska voters legalized recreational marijuana. But after initial growth, the industry has seen stagnation, which has once again opened the door to the black market. In 2022, the governor convened the Advisory Task Force on Recreational Marijuana, whose number one recommendation was tax reform in addition to various policy reforms. The bill you have before you today builds off the work that was started during the 33rd legislature with House Bill 119, including both the structure of tax reform suggested by the Advisory Task Force, as well as various policy reforms recommended by the task force and stakeholders. Making the marijuana industry more sustainable will allow it to flourish for years to come and finally close the door on the black market. Stabilizing this industry will also help stabilize the revenue it generates. The revenue provides critical funding for programs including the Recidivism Reduction Fund, the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, and in our House State Affairs Committee, we also adopted an amendment which designates 25% of the additional revenue for education. So I appreciate the committee hearing the bill again today, and I just would like to mention a couple of specific sections in the legislation. The key provision of this bill requires reducing the existing marijuana excise tax rate from $50 per ounce to $12.50 an ounce immediately, and after a transition period, the excise tax would then be repealed and replaced with a 6% sales tax. In 2025, Alaska raised about $25 million in revenue from marijuana excise taxes. And currently, that revenue is statutorily designated as follows: 50% to the Recidivism Reduction Fund, which in 2025 totaled $12.6 million, 25% to the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, which totaled $6.3 million in 2025. And currently, the remaining 25% goes to the general fund. In Sections 1 and 10, we allow for upstream sales so that marijuana stores can sell their products back to producers, helping businesses to offload unsold products back to producers securely so that they can be resold and not fall into the black market. Section 2 is requiring a tracking number per crop of marijuana. I'd just like to note that this has been addressed through regulation, and AMCO Chair Bailey Stewart can also speak to this. If we were to remove this provision of the bill, we would see a savings in the current fiscal notes of the bill of $250,000. So we would recommend removal since it's been addressed through regulation. Sections 3 through 9 of the bill allow for biennial licensing for marijuana establishments, aligning them with current liquor license laws, which require renewal every 2 years. And Section 13 of the bill, skipping ahead, was added by the House State Affairs Committee, and it designates that remaining 25% of marijuana revenue that currently goes to the general fund towards education. I would just like to note for the members that there is a language amendment that we would need here to actually functionally accomplish that purpose and avoid creating a dedicated fund. So we would ask for the committee to consider that in future hearings. Additionally, in Section 14, we changed the tax payments from monthly to quarterly. This has been a particularly burdensome requirement as the only marijuana tax collection facility currently in the state is in Anchorage. The industry mostly deals in cash, and the federal government makes this very burdensome with their requirements, and so changing to a quarterly would significantly help reduce the burden on the industry. Section 16 requires the Department of Revenue to establish at least one tax collection facility in four judicial districts. And I would say that while this was an initial strong priority in putting the legislation forward, we would be comfortable removing this section as it would reduce the fiscal note in this legislation by over $3 million as establishing those additional tax collection facilities and staffing them is very expensive. Then in sections 18, 20, and 21, I would just like to note for the committee that we would need to change effective dates in this bill for the excise tax, the marijuana sales tax implementation, and the effective date, respectively, in those sections. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to offer two important notes for this committee to consider. With incorporation of these potential suggested changes from our office, we would see a large decrease in the currently projected implementation costs. Secondly, we're going to hear today about the fiscal notes and the initial and potentially longer-term reduction in the recidivism reduction and marijuana education and treatment funds. I'd like to couch this conversation, though, by talking about the lost revenue this industry has seen over the past few years by doing nothing. Basically, if we do nothing, we will continue to see reduction in revenue overall from the current excise tax, as the marijuana industry is struggling. It's an emergent industry, and with a tax policy that allows it to stabilize, even with potential to need to backfill UGF revenue in early years, it is my belief, and it aligns with the recommendations from the task force, that we would eventually see increased growth in the industry and that that revenue would eventually be replenished. I'd just like to put that into context as we discuss the fiscal notes today. And, Mr. Chair, that is the summary.
Great, thank you. What I'm thinking I'd like to do is, before we get into the policy considerations of the bill, I'd like to touch base or get the updated fiscal notes on the table, but do we have any clarification questions? Representative Josephson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one thing sort of stood out to me, Representative Ashley. You said that the bill would allow for resale back from the end of the economic stream to the wholesaler, to the cultivator, and that you would do that, or the bill would do that, to avoid, I guess, seepage into the black market. And that strikes me as disturbing. I mean, I think most of the industry is law-abiding, isn't it? I mean, it just strikes me as, what? why would this happen, and why am I wanting to cooperate, frankly, with an industry where this happens?
Representative
Carrick, we'll take up this question, and then Representative Allard, then we're going to jump right into the fiscal notes, and then we'll come back to the policy considerations. Representative Carrick?
Sure, that sounds great. Through the co-chair to Representative Josephson, not saying necessarily that this occurs right now, although if you want to have a better understanding of current market activity, I'd maybe direct that question to Bailey Stewart, who's online. But right now, this is a statutory restriction. They're not allowed to do this, so this would just allow for something that is fairly standard industry practice, to my understanding, in other states, and would prevent this potential from taking place. But to talk about current market activity, it'd be better to direct that question to the AMCO board chair.
Okay, thank you.
Is the AMCO, oh yeah, Bailey Stewart's, is there? Mm-hmm. Ms. Bailey Stewart's, if you're online, Would you like to address the question? And if so, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yeah, this is Bailey Stewart through the chair, Representative Josephson. Will you repeat your question? I had a hard time hearing you.
Representative Josephson?
Yes. My question is, the sponsor, who's worked very hard on this, and I appreciate that, alluded to the threat of the industry committing an illegality by allowing seepage of its product, its legal product, into the black market, presumably for compensation. And that strikes me as really bad, and worthy of prosecution or something. Is that really happening? And if it is, don't we need regulation to stop it?
Ms. Stewart?
To answer your question, there is presumably some of the legal industry going to the black market when licensees close. And we're seeing a greater number of cultivations close. While there's no definitive evidence of this, presumably that is what could take place. What we're really seeing with the black market is it's coming through the mail from the lower 48 into the state of Alaska. However, I will bring your attention to something that we call diversion, which is black market trying to enter the recreational market to avoid taxation. So we have, and in my testimony later this morning, I'll kind of explain what we're seeing on that front.
Okay. I'm not hearing her beautifully.
No. Representative Josephson?
I just couldn't hear her well enough.
Ms. Stewart, I don't know if maybe you're on a speaker and or if you could get closer to the mic.
I'm actually on my phone and I'm not on speaker. Maybe if I speak a little bit louder, can you hear me clearly?
We can hear you a little better, yes. If you could maybe repeat the response.
Yeah, so there is the probability that black market is entering the recreational market, and it's not through any means that regulation can prevent this. What we're seeing is an increase in cultivations closing, and when a cultivation closes, there's a question about where does the marijuana product go when it closes, and do these facilities actually close? Because they are no longer under the jurisdiction of AMCO, and the Department of Public Safety is no longer addressing the black market issues that we're seeing in our market. However, I will bring your attention to something that we call diversion. Diversion is black market entering our recreational market to avoid taxation, and it's something that the board is actively trying to address through regulatory means.
Well, yeah, okay. Follow-up? Well, just that a comment. I mean, diversion is well known. It's this other act where you've licensed cultivators, forgetting they're licensed, I guess. I don't have any other comment.
Okay, Representative Allard.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Representative Carrick. So the black market is actually something, through the chair, the black market is actually something that is established by making something legal because now they have competition. When people think there's a black market when marijuana or other drugs are illegal, that's not true. The drug is just illegal. So the black market then thrives upon making something legal, and then they have it as a supplement. So I just wanted to say that the taxes and the prices and what has happened in the state of Alaska is that there's about a 45% increase in a black market for the state of Alaska since it has established about a 45% increase. The legal cost of marijuana, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Carrick, is it $250 to $300 an ounce?
Representative Carrick?
Thank you, through the chair. I'm trying to see if I have that piece of information. That would actually be a good question as well for Ms. Stewart. She might have that off the top of her head there.
Ms. Stewart?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, the current industry market price can be anywhere from $180 an ounce to $400.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Depending on the type of product.
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And so that's a lot, because then what happens is the black market has dropped their prices on an average between $100 and $150. So because we've legalized marijuana, we've actually formed a black market, and this black market makes it attainable for individuals who are not of age, children, high schoolers, to now use marijuana. Also, I believe it's $125 million, and I'm throwing these numbers out so maybe somebody can answer it. It's about $125 million worth of revenue coming into the state of Alaska, or not state of Alaska, that is being accessed. And then there's about $200 million that is being accessed for illegal marijuana. So this has sparred an illegal use of marijuana where, honestly, the federal government and DEA, I have some contacts over there, said that it's not really there's fentanyl and other things that are at higher priority. And it just concerns me that because we've legalized marijuana in the state, that we have actually formed a black market that's selling to our kids. So that's a concern. So I don't know, maybe I don't know what question I have in there, but I'm just a little bit concerned about what's happened to forming a black market in the state of Alaska.
Representative Kirk.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, I don't really want to speak to the black market pre- and post-legalization, but what I will say is currently marijuana in Alaska is a $138 million industry. We have 1,500-plus direct jobs, potentially more now. That statistic is from 2021, and 475 active licensees as of February 2025 and 2026. And so there's definitely a large market for people who both want to cultivate, manufacture, sell, and purchase legal product. And that industry still has the strong potential to thrive. And I think when you talk to market experts on this, they may disagree about whether legalization increases or decreases black market activity.
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And I guess this question is for AMCO. Thank you, Representative Carrick. With the legalization of marijuana, I know the answer, but I want to see if AMCO maybe can do some clarification. Is there an increase on outside drugs like fentanyl and any other? I don't know all these drugs, methamphetamines or whatever, coming through China and Mexico is there been an increase because we've legalized, or we're going to change things, and will this help bring more illegal drugs into the state of Alaska?
Ms. Stewart?
I know that's a little bit loaded.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I can't speak to the increase of the other illicit drugs. However, there is a new DPS report, let me pull it up, that can help the 2025 annual report to legislature and the governor from the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analyst Commission. You'll be able to see those numbers for methamphetamine and fentanyl. My understanding is that when DPS is seeing marijuana, they're seeing it in coinciding with other illicit drugs, and they're seizing it through those means. However, I will say that DPS does not actively search for illegal marijuana grows or illegal retails.
Thank you. I'll get the information and I'll give it to the committee. I have it, and I just don't have it with me today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if we could jump over to the fiscal notes, and then we'll come back to the discussion here. First up, let's see here. We have seven fiscal notes, and the first one is looks like Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And that would be Director Kevin Richard. Mr. Richard, if you can put yourself on the record and maybe cite the control code in the bottom right of the fiscal note to make sure that we have the updated version.
Co-Chair Foster.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you. Before we jump into the fiscal notes, when we get to the fiscal note that's specifically related to the section that Representative Carrick was talking about potentially removing from the bill, could we clearly identify that fiscal note?
Sure. And Ms. Carrick, Representative Carrick, which one, can you flag which one that's going to be here?
It, Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Stuart Relay, staff for Representative Carrick. To Representative Bynum's question, Representative Carrick flagged two sections that could be removed to save money. The first one relates to batch tagging, which is section two of the bill. That is in this first fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, control code VLUEA. And the final section that Representative Carrick referenced is in the Department of Revenue fiscal note, control code WYARH. And those are the two fiscal notes that reference those sections.
Okay, and just as a cross-reference, the OMB component for that one looks like that is 2476, and then the control code for the other one is OMB component 3119.
Yes.
So, okay.
Thank you.
So, and also I'd like to note we did have Representative Galvin join us earlier. Thank you. So with that, I believe we're on the first one, which was the commerce one. And I have now gotten all of my items out of order. So I'm going to find that here. Okay, Mr. Richard, if you're there, if you could put yourself on the record.
To the chair, for the record, this is Kevin Richard, director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. To discuss the fiscal note, control code VLUEA, this was the one that a removal of section 2 in the bill would impact the services outlay of $250,000 a year, which would be for the development and implementation of batch tagging through our marijuana tracking system Metric. And there would be every other year a reduction in marijuana revenue of approximately $2.2 million for switching to a biennial registration period.
Okay, do we have any questions on the fiscal notes? And we can, if folks think of questions later, we can always come back to this. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Richard. And next up I have Community Residential Centers, Kevin Worley, Administrative Services Director, if you could put yourself on the record. In the room.
Excuse me. Kevin Worley, Director of Administrative Services, Department of Corrections. The fiscal note that I have with the control code of VYBF and K. For our particular fiscal note, this affects our appropriation for the Community Residential Center as one of our funding sources. So based on the projected revenue for the Department of Revenue on the Recidivism Reduction Fund, there would be a decrease of $2.1 million, which we would offset against a general fund.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any questions. Again, we'll come back if anybody does have – we might have a question. We'll come back to this if we do have questions. Thank you, Mr. Worley. Oh, sure. Representative Hammond.
I have a question on that first fiscal note.
Sure.
I wanted DEC CED.
Okay, and that'll be for Mr. Richard or the representative, Representative Hannon?
I think it's for Mr. Richard because as I'm reading the fiscal note, there's two portions. One is the ongoing cost. So if we deleted section two, the annual cost of operating it of $255,000 would be reduced. But my question is the revenue reduction. Would that remain?
Mr. Richard?
Through the chair, this is Kevin Richard from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. That is correct. The out-of-year cost estimates for services, that $250,000 would be reduced in total, but the revenue reduction would remain the same. Currently, marijuana licensees are on an annual renewal process, which is when we generate the majority of our revenue. So if they were renewing every other year, then we would see a reduction in that revenue.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see here. The next fiscal note that we have is Department of Health, Behavioral Health, and that would be Jen Carson, Division Operations Manager. Thanks for joining us today. If you could put yourself on the record.
Good morning. I'm Jen Carson. I'm the Division Director for the Division of Behavioral Health. We have two fiscal notes. The first one is component number 2665 and control number EEVUV. So these reductions, we've had reductions over the past several years that impact the division. Those are through the Marijuana Education Treatment Fund as well as the Recidivism Reduction Fund. And they impact grants that go out into the community that provide education and treatment. Some of those programs are our Recidivism Reduction Grant Program, Residential and Withdrawal Management Program, Outpatient Behavioral Health Services, the Bethel Sobering Center, as well as Peer and Consumer Support Program.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Ms. Carson, you started your comments with, we've seen a reduction in revenue over the last few years, and I want to narrow in on that. Have you already seen a reduction in the tax revenue currently generated under the marijuana tax? Is that what you're speaking to, or overall you've seen a reduction? So specifically on the tax, have you seen a reduction in the tax revenue over the last few operating years?
Through the chair, Representative Hanna, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next fiscal notes.
Yep, the next one is control number YTWFB. And again, this component is our behavioral health treatment and recovery, and my comments would still be the same as the previous fiscal note on the impacts.
Okay, I don't see any questions. Again, we'll come back if folks would like us to. So thank you very much, Ms. Carson. Okay, the next one that we have is public health, chronic disease prevention, and health promotion. Heather Rogers, administrative operations manager, and I think online possibly. Let's see here. Ms. Rogers, or it looks like you're in Anchorage, if you could put yourself on the record. Ms. Heather Rogers, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to her. The next one we have is Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. That's Diana Thornton, Administrative Services Director. Ms. Thornton.
Yes, thank you. For the record, this is Diana Thornton with the Department of Public Safety Administrative Services Director. The component affected is control number first is GBJQL. The component number is 521 for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The Department of Public Safety uses this funding for the CDBSA to support domestic violence and sexual assault community grants and victim advocacy services. The funding revenue projects reduction in the tax changes reduce the revenue, and we have replaced it with general funds.
Question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Ms. Thornton, have you seen a reduction in the revenue to this fund over the last few fiscal years as already a reduction in tax that's being collected currently under the current tax structure?
Ms. Thornton?
We've used the figures from the Department of Revenue. There have been some reductions in the revenue from this source.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see here. I'm going to check back to see if Ms. Heather Rogers is there. Ms. Rogers?
Hello.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record. Ms. Rogers, you're coming through in very small bites. Are you there? I think it might be a bad connection, possibly. Well, we're going to come back to you here in a moment. Next, we're going to go to Tax Division, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director. Mr. Spanos, looks like you're also calling in from Anchorage.
Thank you. For the record, Acting Tax Director Brandon Spanos, and our fiscal note control number is WYARN, and there are several parts to the bill, to the fiscal note.
Mr. Spanos, I'm sorry. We've got before us control code WYARH, and you had one that was ending in N. Is that correct?
I apologize. I misspoke. It is ending in H, the one I'm looking at.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
So I first wanted to note that in our in updating this fiscal note for SLA 2026, we did assume that the effective date would change by 1 year. So those assumptions are baked into the revenue and cost estimates. And so first, on the revenue side, the bill would change initially, as noted previously, from $50 an ounce to $12.50 per ounce in 2027. And then it would shift to a sales tax of 6% on the retail tax in FY27 and forward. And so our fiscal estimation on those revenue changes take both of those things into account. We would estimate seeing an $8.1 million revenue reduction in FY27, and then that would slowly decrease down to $6.5 million in 28 and $5 million in the out year 2032. The revenue has a bunch of assumptions that we listed in our fiscal note, and those are the revenue reductions are broken out between UGF and DGF, and the fiscal note on page one, we can only show those two lines, and so the UGF is clear enough, but the DGF has several components, and you can see that on page three of our note. We've broken it out by fund code, so that's recidivism fund, and then the other three that were already discussed, those are all shown on that in that table. So then moving on to the costs, as mentioned previously, if we weren't to do the cash rooms in each of the judicial districts, the fiscal note could be reduced by roughly $3.6 million, and that's because those cash rooms, we would need to hire employees to staff the cash counting as well as have a secure location, safes, other security functions, et cetera. And so the costs without that would be just implementing the changes in our Gentex system and our revenue online system. Because of the effective date, even assuming the year forward change, that is still a very quick stand-up. We would have to stand up basically a sales tax for the retail stores, and that is a brand-new tax. It would require programming the system to function with our current modules, and less than 12-month period is a difficult time frame to fit a new tax like that to build into our system. So we would double our regular and anticipated cost for that type of tax or change, rather, from $1 million to $2 million, which could be reduced if we had at least 12 months to implement. And then there is a little bit of travel that would remain in the fiscal note because under a sales tax, we would do more on-site visits because we'd have over 200 taxpayers to verify. We want to be on-site and see some of their transactions.
Okay. Do we have any Representative Hennen?
Mr. Spanos, thank you through the chair. Mr. Spanos, I think you've been with the division since the beginning of our taxation on this industry. Could you tell me, it's not specific to the current fiscal note, but when the Division of Revenue started to see a reduction in the revenue that we were generating out of the current tax structure, and if you have some ballparks percentages of the decline we've seen in that revenue over the last, say, five fiscal years.
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, thank you for the question. I don't have that data right in front of me. We can get back to you with those reductions. I can speak in general terms to that we have seen year-over-year reductions. So as was mentioned previously, marijuana became legal in 2014, and I was with the division at the time. In fact, I was in this position when it became legal. But it took a time to set up the tax system as well as for AMCO to set up their processes and regulations. And so I think the first sales happened in 2017. And at the time, we did see a lot of compliance between with tax payments. We did put in regulation that different parts of the plants were taxed at different rates. So we have $50 an ounce per bud, $25 an ounce for something called immature or seedy or failed bud. And we put that in regulation because some taxpayers that were growing outside had very small bud that wasn't capturing the market price. And so at $50 an ounce, it was unprofitable for them to sell that product. So we had a new part of the plant described as seedy or immature bud. And then trim, which is everything else, which is mostly used for edibles, is $15 an ounce. And then we added a clone, which is just a small starter plant at $1 per clone. What we've seen over the years is that in the beginning, there was a lot of compliance and there was a lot of bud being sold, which is what you would expect of if you've seen a marijuana plant, it has the large bud on it. That large bud was sold and taxed at $50 per ounce. But now what we're seeing is the majority of reporting to us is immature seedy bud or trim. And somehow the bud has just disappeared off the plants or is not being sold at retail. And we know that's not true. We've heard in this committee last year and in previous years that some cultivators have stated that they need to misreport in order to stay in business. I have already notified the industry at one of the AMCO meetings that is something that the tax division is going to crack down on. The statutes are what they are today. It is unfortunate if that means that some of them can't stay in business, but unless or until the statutes change, we do need to enforce our statutes, which means that we are asking taxpayers, how is it that you have zero bud sold when you have these healthy plants? So that's the reason for the tax reduction, and then I can get back to you with the numbers.
Representative Hannon?
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Spanos, I think that's a fine description of it. I don't need you to do more homework on this issue because I frequently ask you tax questions, but I do have one follow-up. From the tax collector perspective, going to a sales tax, would that be easier for both enforcement, supervision, and collection versus the, not even bifurcated, the three-tier current grow and producer tax that you are currently required to operate under?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, good question. And I think the answer is a little nuanced in that the answer is it depends, right? So if you're a cultivator, definitely it's much simpler tax because the cultivators would no longer pay the tax. If you're a retailer, the answer is it's more complicated because now they have to have a point of sale system which would include the retail tax and then collect it from the taxpayer, which would be the customer, and remitting it to the state. From a state perspective, from the administration standpoint, I would say it's six of one, half dozen of another, in that on its face, yes, a sales tax would likely be simpler to administer because it's just 6% of the final sale. So you would think that would have less ability for loopholes like misreporting the different rate or the different types of the plant. So on that part of the administration, yes, it would be simpler because everything would just have a flat 6% applied to it. However, enforcement, what we're seeing in other states that have sales taxes is that taxpayers purchase software that helps them evade the tax. So they'll plug this little thumb drive into their system, and it's called a zapper, and it will delete transactions. And in a cash business, it's very difficult to track that. And so bad players will still exist, and we will still have to send out enforcement and try to find these bad players. And in that aspect, if somebody wants to evade tax, it's going to be difficult regardless of what the structure of the tax looks like.
Thank you.
I do have another question for Mr. Spanos, but I would very quickly like to just dispense with the final fiscal note as we near the end of our hour here. And I want to check back in with Ms. Heather Rogers. Are you there?
Good morning. This is Heather Rogers, Administrative Operations Manager with the Division of Public Health. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay, today I will be reading fiscal note for control code XKODY for the Department of Health, Division of Public Health, Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion component. We are submitting a fiscal note to address the decline in marijuana revenue that supports our youth development after school program and requesting a replacement of revenue with general funds for that loss.
Okay, thank you. I don't think we have any, do we have any questions on this fiscal note? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Rogers, and we're going to come back to the prior fiscal note with Mr. Spanos. I think before we go to the next question, Representative Carrick, we just wanted to make a comment with regard to the last question from Representative Hannon. Representative Carrick?
That's correct. Through the chair to Representative Hannon's question, we did ask Ledge Finance for the revenue change in the marijuana tax revenue for FY 21 to 25. So we have those numbers. In FY 21, it was $30 million. In FY 25, it was $25.7 million. And there's a steady decrease for the intervening years.
Okay, and so next we'll go over to Representative Josephson. Question for Mr. Spanos.
Yes, Mr. Spanos, on your fiscal note dated 4 or 5 days ago, you said you would adjust this because of the proposal to delete the section on having these four regional offices that would collect revenue, as I understand it. I guess, tell me if I'm wrong for starters, the part that impacts you is the 25%. I mean, it all impacts you, but there is the DGF diversion. It's probably not the best term. But there's the Recidivism and Marijuana Education Treatment Fund. There's a proposal for 25% on education. I guess if you could tell, since I'm being unclear, if you could just tell us what would be in the change in revenue box at the bottom of a control code WYARH if we deleted the section on the collection structures.
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Josephson, if I understood your question correctly, you want to know if the judicial district requirement to collect cash in each of those districts went away, what
yes.
would the change in revenue be?
Yes.
Okay, so the answer, Co-Chair Josephson, is that there would be no change in the revenue. The revenue changes shown on page one are separate. So what it would change is the operating expenditures on page one, so a little bit higher than the revenue
right.
changes.
Follow up.
Operating changes would decrease by roughly $3.6 million, but the change in revenue would stay the same because that is affected by the tax change.
All right. Representative Josephson?
I didn't ask it well or artfully. What I'm trying to say is net of that deletion of the $3.6 million, where does that leave us on total revenue to your division?
Mr. Spanos?
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm not sure I still understand the question. The tax division collects the revenue, but it does not retain the revenue. It all goes to those separate funds. We would be asking, maybe what you're asking for is the fund source on the 1004 UGF of additional receipts we would need. And that I'm going to have to get back to you on. Because some of that $3.6 million that I'm talking about is in most of that, a lot of that is startup costs in the total operating of FY27. And so the out years, that's mostly just adding new positions. And so I believe if I can do my math real quick here, that would be roughly $500,000 less in the out years, and we're asking for $1.5 million, so roughly $1 million would be the net.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And although some of the services costs would also go away, so probably less. It'll be less than $1 million. There's a lot of numbers built into that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Spanos. We've come to the end of our time here. And if folks do have any questions for any of the fiscal notes prior to the next meeting, feel free to reach out and we can make sure that whoever the fiscal note pertains to, we can have them at the next meeting. So appreciate everybody being online. And our next meeting is scheduled for today at 1:30 p.m., and at that meeting we'll hear presentations from Corrections and Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. So if there is nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 9:54 a.m. Thank you.